views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to Grassroots Advocacy Radio, where your host, Marcia Padilla Goad, will leave you feeling empowered, aware, and knowledgeable of what may be impacting your lives and communities politically, but without taking a political position. Get ready to really understand and discover the power you hold as a voter and how you can use your voice to educate lawmakers and influence pending legislation. Grassroots Advocacy Radio is a space for conversations that will educate, empower, influence, and engage listeners, no matter what you may be for or against, or even of a particular political party affiliation. Now is your time to find your voice and share it with others. And now, here's your host, Marcia.
Hello, everyone. I'm Marcia Padilla Goad, and you are listening to Grassroots Advocacy Radio on Transformation Talk Radio. We've reached our third show in the Opioid in Our Nation series, Opioid Epidemic in Our Nation series. And as you recall, our first show, which aired in March, focused on grandparenting children, the young victims in this crisis. Grandparents are among the heroes who are stepping in to care for their grandchildren because they want to prevent losing them to the foster care system. The second show, which aired on June 4th, focused on rural older adults who have fallen victim to this growing crisis. They are described as an important but sometimes forgotten cohort in this opioid crisis. So today we will wrap up this three-part series with a discussion about the epicenter of the opioid epidemic, the long-term economic and social impact, and we'll also explore solutions to ending this epidemic. So I'm pleased to have Mr. William Benson participate in our show again. Bill is president of Health Benefits ABCs, a consulting firm based in Silver Spring, Maryland, that offers aging and public health policy, educational strategic planning, program development, facilitation, research, and evaluation services. Bill is also an advocate for Native American Indian and Alaskan Native elders. Bill, thank you for joining us again.
Absolutely, Marcia. I'm pleased to be back with you for this wrap-up session on your opioid series.
Yes, thank you so much for agreeing to do this. And so I thought about how I wanted to start today's show, and I think it would be most important to start, of course, with some of the statistical information as reported by the Centers for Disease Control. According to the CDC, in 2016 alone, drug overdose killed more Americans than the entire Vietnam War, car crashes, gun violence, and HIV/AIDS ever did in a single year. 18 to 25-year-olds have the highest rates of chronic non-medical use and dependence or abuse of opioid, analgesic, and heroin use. Opioid analgesic death rates highest among 45 to 54-year-olds. Heroin deaths are highest in 25 to 34-year-olds. Groups of people who are most impacted by the opioid abuse are men, whites, and American Indian and Alaskan Natives. Wow. Vietnam War, car crashes, gun violence, HIV/AIDS ever did in a single year. That is startling. So this show is about the epicenter of this crisis. Can you tell us about the largest cohort impacted by this opioid epidemic, who they are, and what are their ages?
Well, I think, Marcia, there may actually be several answers to that question. It depends on how you sort of parse the impact. But of course, with respect to deaths, and you've already certainly mentioned several of the key statistics, according to a recent presentation, well, actually by the U.S. Surgeon General, but data that was reported in June 2018 by JAMA, without question, the epicenter, if you will, of deaths are in that age cohort between 15 and 34. You know, that's where the epicenter is. Those are the folks that are dying at the greatest rates. And so it's young people. So that's a horrific thing to even consider. And the gulf between other age cohorts is certainly significant in terms of deaths. So in terms of deaths, it's certainly that younger population are bearing the brunt of it. In terms of sheer numbers of people misusing opioids or using them improperly or being addicted to them, we have to think about that sort of forgotten population that we talked about in your second show.
Yes.
And that's older adults, just because of the sheer numbers. And one of the reasons driving that, making that distinction between opioids that are illicit and opioids that are licit, that is legal, which is mostly prescription drugs for pain relief.
Right.
So we know that in the older adult population, they're far more likely to have greater numbers of people with chronic pain, therefore taking pain medications. And they also have coverage under Medicare Part D, the prescription drug benefit. So they have coverage to pay for those drugs. So that population has a profound impact when one thinks about who's affected the most. And the third population that I think is really important to discuss when we think about the overall impact, and that's kids, young kids, kids of parents that are misusing opioids. The impact on them is absolutely lifelong, most likely, and they have a very long time to go because they are young.
Right.
So I think that, it depends on the lens that you look at it, but clearly in terms of deaths, it's young adults, no question about that.
That's interesting. And as I went through my research studies, I came across an article that said heroin versus prescription drugs. And as you mentioned, older adults are more likely to misuse prescription opioids, while younger people are using illicit drugs like heroin and fentanyl. So what do you think is the drive? What do you think is driving younger people to use heroin and the other opioids on the black market? Why is that happening?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons for that. One is they're likely to not need them for chronic pain. And of course, some do, but the majority probably do not, unlike older adults or middle-aged adults. So they're not seeking in the same numbers prescription drugs for that purpose. They are seeking drugs for other purposes, whether they're recreational or, whatever their motivation. So I think the fact that for the younger adult population, it's definitely not driven by the need for chronic pain medications. But even if it is, they are far less likely to have insurance coverage and particularly coverage for expensive prescription drugs. So that they're forced, if they can't afford those drugs or can't get access to them because they have no coverage, then that takes them into the illicit market or the black market or the illegal market. Or in many cases, and this is also true with older adults, if either they run out of the ability to pay for their prescription drugs or they can no longer get the prescriptions, they may turn to illicit drugs because they're so much cheaper.
Right.
The cost of heroin is so cheap anymore that it's easy to pay for relative to prescription drugs.
Wow.
And I think those are the drivers with the younger population.
So it's interesting. I came across another study, and some of these statistics, of course, came from the CDC. But there are nearly every state in the U.S. saw its overdose death rate increase between 2010 and 2016, and often the jump was significant. The only states that saw a decrease were Oregon, Montana, and Nebraska. But as I looked closer, I realized that that decrease wasn't very significant. And I believe in the case of Nebraska, the rates in 10 years went from 2.4 to 2.2. And in Oregon, opioid overdose deaths decreased while meth deaths soared. So according to the CDC, there are 11 states dealing with the highest rates of overdose deaths per capita, 100,000 people. So the top three states among those 11, and I'm going to read you the top three from overdose deaths, starting with lowest to highest. New Hampshire came in at number three with overdose deaths at 39. Ohio at number two at 39.1. And West Virginia at number one. And we talked about this in the second show. In West Virginia, that number is at 52. There's a huge jump between these two states, by the way, Ohio and West Virginia. What can you tell us about these three states and what is really happening there?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know that I can answer it. I can only speculate. But what I can say about West Virginia, because we know a good deal about West Virginia, it is a very, very poor state. It's a state with a very limited industrial base or a business industry base. It has relied historically on coal and, you know, basically manual labor of one kind or another, which means that great numbers of people have suffered work-related injuries, either taking them out of the job market early or in their retirement. They're dealing with chronic pain from the nature of the labor that they did. Beyond that, of course, they've lost their industry in those states. So coal mining, timber have dropped, you know, dramatically in West Virginia. And I think it's fair to say the same thing is true in Ohio with its loss of its industrial base in terms of steel, coal mining in Ohio. And so I would think that if one looked deeply at the statistics in those states, they would find a correlation between what the labor was or the industry was in particular communities or counties and find, I would bet, for example, that Columbus, Ohio, the state capital, which is a white collar capital city that has, you know, high rates of insurance companies and state workers, I will bet you would find a very different rate there than you would along the border, West Virginia, and the border with Kentucky, in more of the coal mining areas and heavy industry areas, or up in the northeast corner where steel and the steel mills were. And so I think that's one. So I think the combination of poverty combined with a loss of jobs and industries, and the type of the work causing people to, because of their manual labor, to suffer work-related injuries and therefore chronic pain, requiring them to try to get relief from that pain through either prescription drugs or illicit drugs, would drive that. I'm less clear about New Hampshire. New Hampshire, I really don't know what to say about that, except that I suspect that there's a real issue with respect to work-related injuries and the kind of timber, certainly not coal, but timber and maybe mills. It was a large mill state, but I'm less clear about New Hampshire, but Ohio and West Virginia. We also know that in West Virginia, there was, and it's probably true in many other states that you've mentioned as well, but we know the data's there, that there was a massive attempt by the manufacturers to really target West Virginia and sell and promote incredible numbers of prescriptions. In fact, there was one study that was done, and I'm trying to find my notes from this, But essentially, in an investigation done by a West Virginia newspaper, the Charleston Gazette Mail, they found that drug wholesalers, quote, showered the state with 780 million pain pills. Mm-hmm. That was 433 pain pills for every person in the state, man, woman, and child. Mm-hmm. So the combination of the need because of injuries, the poverty, and a tremendous effort to sell drugs there. This is prescription drugs, quote, legal drugs. Mm-hmm. Just showered that state, as they said, with prescription drugs. And of course, you know, an awful lot of those prescription drugs end up, in the black marketplace as well.
Wow. So Bill, let's take a quick break and come back and continue this discussion. You're listening to Grassroots Advocacy Radio. I'm your host, Marsha Padilla-Goad. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of being tired? Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. Did you know the adrenal glands, the workhorse of the body? They are the means by which you position yourself in life for whatever comes your way. Tiny but mighty, producing hormones the body uses to promote energy and vitality. These adrenals determine how you respond to stress, and when depleted, the body loses its ability to function powerfully when we need it most. The much-needed adrenaline or epinephrine is not available for emergency situations. Cortisone and cortisol, the longer-acting anti-stress adrenal hormones, can also become depleted due to the pace of our everyday lives. We overwork and undernutrition our most powerful ally that helps us to live the lives we desire. We are able to determine the optimum function of the adrenals and put your system back in balance. Contact us today to feel powerfully energized at 888-777-4232 or visit us at MaryJaneMack.com.
Hi, I'm Laura Meeks, and the most common problem that my clients face is all work and no play. This is why I created Fly High Living. I help you develop a balanced life plan and guide you to a place where you love to wake up in the morning.
Call 888-666-1570 or go to flyhighliving.com to sign up for the 4-week Flight Plan for Life course.
What is holding you back from living the life you are meant to live? Why is it vital to believe in something bigger than yourself? Are you in physical or emotional pain? Tune in monthly to Vibrant Purposeful Living. Awaken the vibrant life within you with Lou Paradise and Dr. Pat on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Lou's passion is to help everyone experience positive solutions for life. Find out more about Lou with Vibrant Purposeful Living at LouParadise.com.
Despite all efforts, is your pursuit of emotional freedom not going so well? Are you still stressed and anxious? It must be getting harder and harder to work on these issues. Meet Dr. Friedman. His breakthrough seminar may be the solution you have been looking for. It provides you with the insights and tools to reopen lines of inner communication, address deeper subconscious roots of your challenges, and discover how self-compassion can truly quiet your fear.
What medicine and research taught me is that we have all unlimited potential to heal, grow, and thrive.
So learn more at drfriedman.com. That's drfriedemann.com. And tune in to Dr. Friedman's Empowerment Radio every first and third Thursday at 9 a.m. for even more ways to live your life with courage, integrity, and trust in your own counsel.
We're back on Grassroots Advocacy Radio. I'm your host, Marsha Padilla-Goad. My guest today is Mr. William Benson, president of Health Benefits ABCs, based in Silver Spring, Maryland. Bill, before we continue our discussion, I would like for you to give your contact information, if you don't mind, to our listeners. Let them know of any advocacy efforts you have going on, or simply how they can reach you if they want to have an offline conversation with you. Do you mind sharing okay. that?
Not in the least, Marcia. My email address is TBCG, that is Tom, Bill, Charlie, George, TBCG at starpower.net. My office phone number is 301-933-6492. Again, 301-933-6492. And I would say from an advocacy efforts, we continue to do our best to try to get funding for addressing elder abuse in this country, as well as more generally vulnerable adult abuse, particularly for adult protective services. And if we get a chance to come back to that later, maybe we can. Mm-hmm. But adult protective services is the system in every one of the states that receives reports of abuse, neglect, or exploitation of adults age 18 and over, including older adults. Mm-hmm. Only a couple of states don't address the 18 to 64-year-old population. So we're talking about adults. And there's virtually no federal funding going out to states' APS programs. So we need more advocacy to help make sure that legislation like the Elder Justice Act gets both reauthorized or renewed, and that Congress is willing to put money to support adult protective services who are out there on the front lines responding to reports about abuse, neglect, and exploitation, including that which is driven by the opioid crisis. The other thing I'll mention is, and there's tremendous need to make sure Congress maintains the Social Services Block Grant, SSBG, which is a grant program that's been around for many years to states. It's very significant. States can use it for a wide variety of services, and in fact do use it for drug treatment programs and services and other support services that people who have been victims of drug abuse, you know, themselves need and can tap into. And yet that particular funding source, the Social Services Block Grant, continuously remains under threat. In fact, the president's budget for FY20, which is the federal fiscal year that begins October 1, would eliminate the Social Services Block Grant. And without it, many states would not be able to do the job they're doing today to respond to the opioid crisis.
Wow. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. You know, Bill, this week is a special week for our nation, of course. You know, we celebrate the 4th of July. And, you know, as I was putting the show together, I of course, thought about a cohort, a group of men and women who heart and soul fight for our freedom to protect our nation and our democracy. They also come home with injuries. Oftentimes, they are battling chronic pain and are vulnerable to this opioid epidemic. What information can you share with us about this cohort and what the VA, you know, the government is doing to make sure that our men and women in service are protected?
Well, let me start first with a little bit that I know. This is not an area of expertise for me, but I've done a little bit of research into it, and there is definitely information beginning to emerge. A 2017 article that spoke about the specific challenges that we face with respect to veterans and opioids found that there is, among veterans, there is a higher risk for issues with opioids due both to chronic pain because of injuries or conditions that they suffered while they were serving, but also because of PTSD rates, post-traumatic stress syndrome rates as well. PTSD is a source of, puts people at higher risk for opioid misuse or abuse. And in fact, according to this article, apparently opioid dependency, issues related to dependency withdrawal, and those related to PTSD it can look very similar. So there's a real issue between understanding which is which. And that tremendously, according to this article, complicates the ability to both spot, address, and treat this opioid dependency and issues related to it because of confusion between PTSD and what it looks like to be addicted to opioids. A complex area. As you know, an area that I've worked in, Marcia, is the impact of opioids on rural America, yes, particularly rural older adults.
Yes.
And one of the things that was reported just in an article in Stars and Stripes newspaper in June, parenthetically, I grew up as a military dependent, and mm-hmm. we lived overseas for many years when I was young, and I read the Stars and Stripes regularly, and it's where I always got the baseball box scores. So I'm glad the Stars and Stripes are still out there. And they had an article just in June, this last month, that said that rural veterans are being given almost a third more opioids than their urban counterparts.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And again, I got to believe that that's, it has to be due to one, the difficulty in getting other treatment options, for sure. Possibly the lack of medical coverage and medical resources, and the other issues we've talked about, poverty and all those kinds of things.
Yeah.
And then finally, there was an article that, our study that was released a couple of months ago that showed, this was really interesting to me, showed that veterans who are in dual healthcare systems, that is, like, for example, they're in the VA system, the Veterans Affairs system, and they also are in Medicare. So they get Medicare Part D prescription drug coverage. Mm-hmm. Where they are in these dual systems, they have higher unintentional overdose rates. Now, intuitively, you'd say, I think it would be the opposite.
Yeah.
These are people that not only have health care, they're in several different systems. Why wouldn't they get even better care? And the speculation, the reason is unknown, but the study speculates is there's not enough communication between the two systems. So it's entirely possible that some veterans are getting prescription drugs out of Medicare Part D and at the same time getting them out of the VA. So they may have more prescription drugs than they need,
wow,
and therefore they're compromised by that. Or they may have drugs that are, compromise each other or interact in a very bad way. More work needs to be done, but I found it fascinating that where they are in those dual systems, they have higher unintentional overdose rates, profoundly significant. So,
wow.
Those are some of the things that I've seen of late in the literature and in the press, like the Stars and Stripes, about veterans and opioids. And I think and what are we doing about it? Well, let's hope that that the VA and DOD are providing the kinds of treatment options, both in terms of the clinical interventions, the medications to combat addiction, but also the therapeutic interventions that are needed to help people that are suffering from opioid or prescription drug misuse or overuse or abuse.
Right. And we also know that the ripple effect here is that homelessness among veterans has increased significantly, and this is all related. So, Bill, we are going to take a quick break again. And when we come back, we'll continue this discussion, but I really want to talk about the long-term economic and social costs. So
okay.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back. You're listening to Grassroots Advocacy Radio. Thank you.
Learn and explore fascinating and practical uses of essential oils, how to use them, and how they can enhance your everyday life. The Oil Lounge was founded by three remarkable women with fascinating stories about how essential oils changed their lives. Tina and Laura from The Karmic Path have joined forces to educate the masses in the benefits of Young Living essential oils. For more information, visit theoillounge.com.
Have you ever wondered if there's a way to heal the deep, hidden inner issues, wounds, beliefs, and traumas? The Journey into Spiritual Healing engages people in all areas of their lives to heal themselves and others. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio as Dr. Jaffe brings conversations of healing of body, mind, and spirit as he merges the excellence of traditional medicine with the beauty of spiritual healing. For more information about Dr. Jaffe, this show, and his work, visit drjaffemd.com.
Are you ready to shift your current beliefs about death from debilitating pain and loss? Follow Angie Corbett-Kuyper as she shares that through choice, present moment awareness, and keeping an open mind that anything is possible, even in death. Tune in to Beyond Proof Radio with Angie, redefining death and loss, every first and third Wednesday at 12 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more, visit AngieCorbettKuyper.com.
Are you ready to branch out? Take a leap of faith. Then tune in to Get Rooted Radio with Erica Gifford Mills on TransformationTalkRadio.com every second and fourth Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific to equip, empower, and enlighten yourself. Erica will energize and excite you to power up your passionate dream that sets your soul on fire. So get fearlessly ready and get powerfully rooted in your yes to live it up, love it up, and let it go. Visit GetRootedRadio.com.
Golden Otter Divinations Radio, where the metaphysical meets the mainstream with Autumn Seibel. Tune in the first Friday every month at 9 a.m. Pacific as Autumn, educator, health coach, and medium, explores metaphysical and mainstream strategies on how to elevate your level of conscious living. Draw in the abundance that is yours by divine right. For more information about working with Autumn, visit goldenotter.us. That's golden like the precious metal and otter like the precious animal.us.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
We're back on Grassroots Advocacy Radio. I'm your host, Marsha Padilla Goad. Today, we are discussing the epicenter of the opioid crisis in our nation. Joining me is Bill Benson, president of Health Benefits ABC. It's based in Silver Spring, Maryland. So, Bill, I am curious to know, what can you share with us, or what do you know about the long-term economic costs and the additional public health consequences that we are facing with this epidemic? What can you tell us?
Well, I think what I can tell you is that that for sure the associated care, treatment, and needs of people that have suffered from opioid overdoses or opioid misuse or addictions means that they are going to be consuming resources. Mm-hmm. Particularly in the healthcare sector, but also the social service sector, that would otherwise not be consumed. So, mm-hmm. in other words, every single trip to the emergency room is a huge cost item that wouldn't have been spent if the person hadn't been sent to the emergency room because of a drug overdose or some other condition. We know that in order to be able to stop abuse of opioids or prescription drugs that people are addicted to, we know that they just don't stop on a dime, obviously.
Yes.
And we would have no problem if they stopped on a dime. So they need long-term interventions. They need therapy. They need intensive therapy, maybe hospitalizations for periods of time. So there's all the healthcare costs that then ripple throughout the community and the sector that will likely intensify over time as their needs increase. So we know that there's that cost, but there's the broader cost to society, if you will. And I'm going to use as a microcosm elder abuse. We know that a substantial amount of elder abuse, perhaps a growing amount of elder abuse, is linked to opioid issues in a number of ways. We may end up, I shouldn't even say elder abuse, we should say abuse in general, including child abuse. So we know that as huge numbers of parents who are unable to care for their children because of their drug addiction or because of other health problems associated with drug use end up, in many cases, losing their children temporarily or even long term. There's costs to communities for that, because who's going to pick up the child care costs, the foster care costs, the social service costs in a particular community when that happens? And I was reading something the other day related to the social services block grant program that I mentioned in the previous sector. Mm-hmm. And it noted that in 2016, I believe, 15, in Licking County, Ohio, 71% of abused or neglected children entering into custody was due to parent drug use, largely related to the opioid epidemic. So, you know, the costs, you know, the costs for these kinds of issues ripple out. They consume costs of child protective services, adult protective services, law enforcement, the healthcare sector, the social services sector, the psychotherapy sector. So the costs are huge in terms of very real out-of-pocket expenditures by someone. There's the opportunity costs. You know, those individuals who are addicted or those who suffer as a result of someone's addiction, like their children, for example, or their or other relatives, and themselves certainly are out of the labor market, particularly young people. When we look at the proportion of young people that are over misusing or over taking advantage of drugs, or I shouldn't say that, misusing or using inappropriately drugs. I mean, essentially, that's going to affect, most likely, you know, it's going to affect them in the marketplace, their ability to keep, to land and keep jobs, to then become taxpayers that are contributing to the well-being of their community. So it's one of those problems that it's clear the economic costs are big. They last a long time. They ripple outward in many different directions. Mm-hmm. And the key to reducing those costs is to basically help people to not get addicted in the first place, or to not misuse the drug in the first place, or to stop and get off of it as quickly as possible and help them to sustain staying off of those drugs for as long as possible as the key to reducing those kinds of expenditures. I mean, that would be my, and the microcosm I'll mention very briefly is, when we did our research, we focused on rural communities, and we found that there was a huge, we were trying to figure out what the impact is on older adults, but where we found the major impact was the population age 45 to 64. Huge, the single largest group of deaths in the adult population is in that cohort, 45 to 64, mm-hmm. and it was growing rapidly. And this is a population that is particularly vulnerable, because, and particularly women, because they are very often unlikely to have any health care coverage. They're too young for Medicare. They may be out of the workforce. Right. And so when I think about all the services and programs for older adults that are stretched to the limit, most programs that serve older adults have waiting lists. And now we know coming down the line is this large group of people that will soon be 65 and older that are severely compromised and will have great needs because of their addiction and related problems. And that's going to affect communities in all kinds of ways, including, say, for example, pressures on adult protective services and on the social services system. So I'm not quantifying the economic impact, because I don't know that it's been measured fully, but it's almost like one of those common sense things that says, whoa, this is expensive, and it's going to be more expensive if we don't get a handle on it pretty darn quickly.
Wow. Yeah. And I think I saw somewhere upwards of $72.5 billion, but I don't know if that's per year or if that's, within a certain time frame. But every report I have read has said, if we don't mitigate this, if we don't come up with, you know, effective solutions, this problem is going to get worse. And, you know, I'm curious to know, you know, what is the single biggest reason why America is failing in its response? Do you think some of this is stigmatization?
I think you put your finger on it entirely. I think we still think it's shameful. I think it's something most people keep within their families and their communities a secret. I think the stigma of drug use and abuse is so powerful. And I think among policymakers, it's an absolute classic blame the victim kind of approach. It's this continuing belief that this is, for many people, including policymakers, that this is a lifestyle issue. People choose to take these drugs.
Yeah.
They're taking them for, you know, because they want to get high or because they, you know, it enhances their pleasure in some way, shape, or form. Until we see it for what it is a serious illness.
Right.
And it's something that very few people say, oh, I think I'm just going to go out and abuse drugs. Sure, here and there that happens.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is addiction is a serious medical condition. And until we think of it that way, we are not going to wrap our hands around this issue. We'll be doing Band-Aid approaches to it, one-off programs here and there. We'll give some resources. But until we say this is a serious health issue and it's a serious mental health issue. But, you know, Marcia, it's tied to, even if we say that, oh, it's a serious mental health issue, we still aren't at a place where we easily accept that mental health is a legitimate issue.
Right.
You know, it's still stigmatized as well. So behavioral health and addiction, we've got a long way to go. And I will tell you just here and now, I have a brother who died, who committed suicide, who was a heroin addict, and left a daughter who was born heroin addicted. And has struggled with stuff. And the stigma around that, you know, within the family, within the circle of people that we've known, it's hard to overcome. You know, it's a tough one.
Wow. Wow. Thanks for sharing that. And the truth of the matter is we are all vulnerable to this opioid epidemic, whether it's prescription, because in most cases, that's where it's starting. But before we take a quick break, I would like to mention, I came across this study, and it may not be something that, you know, either of us are well-versed in, but according to the CDC and other research studies, the United States remains the world leader in opioid consumption, abuse, and opioid-related deaths. But this crisis apparently extends well beyond our borders. And I want to mention two countries in particular, Canada and the United Kingdom. According to this report, Canadians are only second to Americans per capita of opioid consumption. That population suffers disproportionately with the highest rates of consumption of opioid-related deaths occurring in Western Canada. And that means the four provinces of Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Alberta, and British Columbia. Interestingly, in November of 2016, the Canadian government committed to a comprehensive approach to address the crisis. And that approach includes implementing a public health emergency response with specific goals focused on prevention, treatment, harm reduction, and enforcement. I also want to mention that part of this response is Vancouver is home to the first and only safe injection site in North America. That was established in 2003. The site has seen no deaths from overdose in 14 years since its inception, and it was visited over 10,000 times in June of 2017 alone. And quickly, in the United Kingdom, the UK has been granted the undesirable title as drug overdose capital of Europe. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we'll talk about this. Stay tuned.
Are you your story? Or can you change your story? Can you change what you believe to be true about yourself and your circumstances as part of your healing journey? What if you were to change your expectations? What if you were to invite ease and cooperation into every day and then step back and see what happens? It might just be easier. I'm Megan Edge, and I hope that you'll join me on my new radio show, Playing on the Edge, Radical Change with Ease, with my co-host, Dr. Pat, on Transformation Talk Radio. I look forward to seeing you there.
Want to find out more about Megan Edge? Visit her website at meganedge.ca.
People often ask, what does it mean to thrive? On Thrive by Gen Radio, it means body confidence, mind fulfillment, and soul synchronicity. Create synchronicity with God and learn as Jen shares action steps and real stories that will inspire you to be unstoppable in fulfilling your purpose. Tune in live each Monday at 8 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com and visit JenniferZellup.com to thrive with Jen.
If you have a sense that you are meant for more, join Heather Allison every third Tuesday at noon Pacific as she explores an ancient, forgotten energy within us and helps us access our original archetypal blueprint. The Golden Path will help you remember the key to unlocking your life, love, success, and magic you were meant for. A key to unlocking your Golden Path. Visit heather-allison.com.
Are you ready to finally feel empowered and knowledgeable in your political stance? Let Marsha Padilla Goad educate you on exactly how important grassroots advocacy is in a relatable way to all parties and all perspectives. Tune in to Grassroots Advocacy Radio with Marsha every first Tuesday of the month at 12 p.m. Pacific and 3 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more, visit DynamicsInPublicAffairs.com.
Are you ready to create a life you'll really love? Then you'll want to tune in to the hit show Life Design Radio, From Adversity to Awesome with Susan DiLorenzo. Live each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. No matter where you are in your adversity story, Life Design Radio has got you covered. Get ready to feel inspired, enlightened, and motivated. For more information about working with Susan, visit SusanDiLorenzo.com.
Welcome back to Grassroots Advocacy Radio. I'm your host, Marsha Padilla Goad. Joining us today is Bill Benson, president of Health Benefits ABCs. So before we took our break, I mentioned Canada and the United Kingdom. And I wanted to do this because I am worried that this opioid epidemic is more or less a global crisis. Not only were those statistics startling, but I'm curious to know if there's anything in place to deal with this on a global scale. Bill, do you know anything about this crisis on a global scale that you can share with us?
You know, I really truly don't. I mean, I don't think it's being addressed on a global basis. It ought to be, and it sounds like in particular, it needs to be particularly addressed in what we consider sort of the Western world, and certainly Europe and North America, based on the fact that United States, Canada, and England or United Kingdom are the top three countries in terms of addiction and overdoses.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because I'm also curious to know, you know, here in America, we've started holding these pharmaceutical corporations accountable for the marketing, the manufacturing and distribution of these opioids. And I would like to know if these are the same corporations that are involved on a global scale. So it further research, of course, is needed. And that's definitely something I think I would definitely look closer into. But hopefully there is some research that has been started there. So
I think we'd both be shocked if the leading manufacturers of the prescription drugs that are used, that end up being most commonly misused and so heavily marketed, I think we'd be shocked if it weren't the same corporations, across the globe, and certainly, or if not the globe, the places that can afford their drugs, which are the places you named,
yeah.
United Kingdom, Canada, United States, and of course, other parts of Europe, yeah. It would make sense that their marketing of these expensive drugs would take place in these countries.
Wow. So this is the last segment of today's show. So I think it's very important in this segment for us to discuss how we are going to stop the what we've called the deadliest crisis in America. And so I want to talk about some solutions. In the last show, we talked about solutions that are specific for rural older adults. To date, we know that there has been a lack of policy action. Federal data shows that prescriptions in 2015 were still three times what they were in 1999. And a recent report from the CDC shows that in 2015, the amount of opioids prescribed was enough for every American to be medicated around the clock for 3 weeks. So far, Congress has passed the 21st Century Cures Act that appropriated $1 billion to drug treatment over 2 years. And the reports I've read said that this, of course, falls short of the tens of billions a year that is needed for this crisis. So I've got two questions, or maybe you can answer it in two parts. Why won't Congress approve the money needed, as experts agreed is necessary to fix this problem? And secondly, what is needed here? Do we need a crackdown on supply? Do we need an expansion of addiction treatment? What exactly, what are the solutions that we need to have here?
Well, I think the metaphor for me, of course, is, as you remember, we once had what was labeled the war on drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And in truth, the war on drugs was the war on drug addicts. It was an attempt to criminalize and incarcerate, millions of people, or hundreds of thousands, and particularly in the African American community.
Mm-hmm.
What we really need is a war on addiction. That's what we need a war on. And that, and in, our history is we spend lots of money on wars. And so we need to view this as a war on addiction, and we need to be willing to pony up the amounts of money necessary to tackle a problem that is this great, a problem that this president, this administration has said is the most critical public health challenge of our time. That would suggest that we need to spend billions of dollars to deal with this problem. And we're not spending that kind of money, in part because I think it goes back to our earlier conversation about stigmatization and the ultimately blaming the victim. And until we get away from that and really believe that this is a public health problem and that this is a serious problem for people of addiction, and we need to help them get beyond that and to overcome it, requires a sustained commitment to expenditures, to be honest, and stay in the game. It's not a 1 year, we'll throw some money at it and then move on to the next crisis. But even the Department of Health and Human Services has laid out on paper what is an important strategy, which they refer to the HHS 5-point strategy to combat the opioids crisis. And the first one, number one, better addiction prevention, treatment, and recovery services. Absolutely number one by HHS, but we need the money to match the rhetoric. Number two, we need better data. Absolutely. Number three, and we've been talking about this for decades, we need better pain management so that people in chronic pain have alternatives to getting the prescription drugs that we have available today or turning to the illegal or illicit drugs because of their pain. We need four, according to HHS, better targeting of overdose reversing drugs, you know, make them widely available. There are many rural places, for example, where you can't even, there's no place to go and get these reversal drugs. And then of course, and you've mentioned this, we need better research. What I'm pleased to see on the HHS 5-point strategy is not one of them is better law enforcement, even though law enforcement obviously has an important role to play. But it's not the role that is needed as much as these others if we want to get people to stop taking the drugs or to get off of them and resume and try to have a decent life.
Wow. Wow. Bill, I want to thank you so much. We're actually going to start wrapping up. I thank you so much for being a part of this show, the last show. And as always, I love ending my shows to remind citizens and voters of this great nation that it is in our best interest to be informed on issues and legislation that are being considered at the local, state, and federal levels that may impact our lives and communities. It is also our responsibility as citizens to educate our government officials about how their actions are impacting our lives. If we don't tell our stories to them, they won't know how to best represent us. If you all would like to contact me, you can visit my website at dynamicsinpublicaffairs.com. A recording of this radio show will also be archived and available for download on the website. I want to thank you, Bill, for joining us today to educate us about the opioid epidemic. And I want to thank you all for tuning in to Grassroots Advocacy Radio. Have a wonderful 4th of July week. And please join me every first Tuesday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on Transformation Talk Radio. See you next time. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Grassroots Advocacy Radio, conversations to educate, empower, influence, and engage with Marsha Padilla Gobe. Tune in the first Tuesday of every month at 12 p.m. Pacific and 3 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com as Marsha will continue to educate you on grassroots advocacy and the vital role it plays in the legislative process. For more information or to listen to past shows, visit dynamicsinpublicaffairs.com. That's dynamicsinpublicaffairs.com. See you next time.